For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
So screen time, can it really impact you and the church? When you think about technology, right, and what has changed over the last 20 years or so, a lot has changed. Think about all the things that didn't exist 20 years ago. There was no such thing as an iPhone, no such thing as a tablet, no Wi-Fi, no Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, no Xbox, right? Nothing like Netflix binging. There was none of that even 20 years ago. And so the rapid expansion of not just devices, but also services that we can enmesh ourselves in has exploded in the last couple decades. And so when we talk about screen time, these are really all the things that I'm talking about. Screen time is really the use of technology such as email, texting, video games, watching videos, browsing the internet, using different apps. All social media falls into this category. And so when we're talking about screen time, this is really what I'm referring to. Specifically in this workshop, you know, there's obviously activities that involve a screen that are inherently morally wrong, such as pornography. I'm not really addressing pornography specifically. I'm more just addressing kind of the morally neutral idea of having and exposing ourselves to activities on the screen and what kind of impact that really has in our lives. And so when we talk about excessive screen time use, what do I mean by excessive screen time or overuse of the screen? This is from a 2015 study. So at this point, this is 4 years ago. A 2015 study that really looked at how many hours are people actually spending looking at a screen every day. And something to kind of note as we talk about these numbers is that all of these things only include recreational use. So all of these numbers exclude screen time needed for work, exclude screen time needed for school, homework, that kind of thing. And so when we talk about this, they really split it into three different categories that they looked at. This is coming from a group, a nonprofit group called the Common Sense Consensus or Common Sense Media. They look at a lot of this different kind of stuff. In kids ages 8 to 12 years old, they found that in 2015, so again, this is 4 years ago, it's probably more now, spent on average over 4.5 hours a day on screens. Teenagers, over 6.5 hours per day on screens. And so parents, you'd think, you know, these guys are role models, they probably maybe see some issues here or something. And yet, alarmingly, I think most shockingly, they found that parents of kids and teenagers spent over 7.5 hours looking at a screen on average per day. What makes these numbers actually have some sort of meaning is that most studies, when they talk about recommendations in terms of screen times, usually tend to limit it at about 2 hours a day. For kids under the age of like 1 year old, they say they shouldn't have any screen time. But for usually kids, teenagers, and adults, they say 2 hours or less per day is a reasonable amount of time to spend on recreational screen use. And so when we think about these numbers, right, this is what we're talking about, excessive screen time. And I'd imagine, I know I myself have a lot of excessive screen time. I am enmeshed staring at my phone, at a computer, at the TV, way more than is absolutely necessary in my life. And while there have obviously been some positive benefits of this, right, we're not here saying technology is evil and I should just like chuck my phone out the window or something like that. That is not the point of what we're talking about today. But the point here is that while there have been some positive benefits of screens and using screens, I think that there are some negative impacts that I really think we need to examine, especially as we're talking about this excessive screen use. And so what kind of effect is this having today? First off, there are studies that have come out, especially in recent years, that have linked excessive screen time to increased depression and increased anxiety. This is from Jean Twenge. She has a PhD. She's got several different articles and books that we're going to be citing from. She wrote an article in Preventative Medicine Reports with a guy, W. Keith Campbell. They say this. They say adolescents who spend more than 7 hours a day on screens were twice as likely as those spending 1 hour to have been diagnosed with anxiety or depression. Now, when you think back about what the averages were for teenagers, the average screen time is over 7.5 hours a day, right? For parents, right? Over 6.5 hours a day for teenagers. And so here they're saying people that spend an excessive amount of time on screens is correlated with an increase in depression and an increase in anxiety. This is from her book, iGen. I'll be citing this a lot. The full title is iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Quite the title. And so she's kind of like zooming in on this generation, and she's got a lot of different statistics, but she looks at this idea because technology is such a kind of integral part of the iGen generation, hence the name iGen. She says, teens who spend more on screens are more likely to be depressed, and those who spend more time on non-screen activities are less likely to be depressed. This comes from a summary of one of the studies that she did where she looked at screen activities such as video games, looking at phone, right, scrolling through social media, computer games, things like that, versus a host of other non-screen activities, which included like sports leagues, hanging out with friends, doing homework, working at a job. And every single one of the non-screen activities correlated to less depression, and every single one of the screen activities correlated to higher depression. And so she's showing this across the board that this is what this is linked to here. Some other interesting studies that she's got, we don't have time to go into them all, but one of them looks at that this specifically social media, that it can not just, it's not just correlated with, but it's actually causing more depression. They did a study where they had a certain group of students, you know, use their Facebook regularly like they would any other week. And throughout the week, they had them do self-assessments about happiness level, stress level, loneliness level. And then they had a group of students where they were like, you're not allowed to use Facebook for the entire week. And again, significantly, the students that were not allowed to use Facebook the entire week reported much higher levels of happiness, lower levels of loneliness and stress in their life. And so it's not just some correlation that we're looking at, but it seems to be saying that there's even a causation between higher use of these things and more depression, more anxiety here. She goes on, teens who are the most active on social media are also those who are most in danger of developing depression. And so specifically kind of zooming in here on social media, they're like the more active you are on social media, the higher likelihood you have of feeling down, feeling depressed. You know, I look at this even in the people that I spend time with, right? We have home churches here in Xenos. One girl in my home church was kind of confiding in me about how social media has caused her a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety in her life. She said this is her quote. She said, whenever I posted stuff, I was super worried. I would just keep refreshing the page. I had a rule for myself. If it didn't get at least 10 likes in the first 10 minutes, I would take it down. Right, so there's this constant anxiety of like, how are people responding to this? How many likes do I have right now? Have people commented on this thing? That causes a ton of stress. And then what happens if people don't like it? We feel sad about it, right? These links, this correlation makes a lot of sense. This is linked to increased depression and anxiety. Additionally, people are feeling lonelier and more disconnected. This one almost doesn't seem that intuitive. You'd think, well, we're in a highly connected world. We can constantly, as soon as we want to interact with someone, we can just open our phone and start interacting with someone. And yet what we're seeing is just the opposite here. Twenge again in her book says the loneliest teens are those who spend more time on social media and less time with their friends in person. And so even though it's social media, it's not providing for this feeling of I feel connected, right? I feel understood by other people. She says the number of teens who get together with friends nearly every day dropped by more than 40% from 2000 to 2015. That people on average are spending an hour less per day with friends, right? And that, you know, it's not only just people don't want to spend time with people because they're like, I'd rather stay home and check out my phone or play video games. But also, even if somebody wants to, it's hard to get other people to want to do the same thing. And so people are spending less time with their friends. Again, I was kind of interviewing some people around me. One high school student was talking about this, and I was asking her, you know, what do you talk about at lunch, you know, with your classmates? Because lunch is always a chaotic time in high school, right? And her response to me was, there isn't a lot of talking at lunch because everybody pulls out their smartphones and plays video games or checks their Snapchat or Instagram. I just wish it was easier to get them to talk. But you know, I wouldn't consider myself old, but I was in high school 10 years ago, and that was not at all even what my high school experience was like, right? Everyone was talking, people were fist fighting, right? It was a completely crazy time. Now nobody's interacting with each other, right? Everybody's just silent, staring at their phones. We're also seeing an emergence of screens and their addictive nature. I put on the handout there, I read a book called Irresistible, The Rise of Addictive Technology and the Business of Keeping Us Hooked, which really looks at how people are hired for these tech companies to make their programs, to make their apps more and more addictive, right? It makes you want to come back for more, use it more. What's interesting about this is when you think about how our brains perceive reward, right? When our brains perceive something as reward, it releases a neurotransmitter called dopamine, right? And dopamine is this sense that, hey, that was good, and I want to get more of that, right? And this is what happens as soon as we get to the next level on Candy Crush, or we get a like on Facebook, or somebody views our story on Snapchat, or something like that. All of these are little rewards that make us say, that's a good thing, and I want more of that. And so it makes it harder and harder to be away from that, because we're craving that little reward again, so we want to go back and check it, and then we're constantly thinking about it when we're not with it. It's interesting, so Steve Jobs, right, the iPhone, everything empire, right? When the iPad came out, you know, he talks about how amazing the iPad is, all of its, you know, capabilities and things like this. And yet Steve Jobs would never let his kids touch an iPad. And you're like, there's something interesting about that, right? When you look across the board at a lot of top tech execs, they have very, very strict limitations on their kids and what they're allowed to do with these technologies that their parents invented. And so that should kind of like alarm us, right? There's something off about that. Why is that? I think it's because they understand that there's an addictive nature to these things, to these applications. We also just see the effects in our lives. I don't know about you guys, but some of the stories that people would share with me, or even that I cited, are things that I've experienced. I've experienced the stress of posting a photo and wanting lots of people to like my photo, right? We all kind of experience this. We experience it in the way that we interact with people. We see the effects in our families, in our friendships. One girl in my home church was going to her freshman orientation and, you know, the cheesy icebreaker games that everyone hates. And she was like, you know, we were all supposed to go around and say one interesting fact about ourselves. She's like, and I couldn't think of anything because all I do is watch videos. How do we interact with people when we don't have anything to talk about? It affects our relationships. How do we ask questions about, you know, popular events that are going on or things that are happening in the world when we just don't really know what's going on, right? We're just so enmeshed in our screens and not in the world around us. We see the effect in our churches. Like I said, I think it's hard for people to build in with people. How do you go up and strike a conversation with a stranger that might want to come check out your church or be your friend when you just don't know how to interact with people very well? You know, like I said, it's not just churches, friendships, but also families is up there. Someone also confided in me, they're like, man, one time one of the most painful things was hearing my daughter tell me, Daddy, I wish you didn't look at your phone as much as you do. Right, that people notice this, it's affecting how we relate in all of these different circumstances here. And so the question is, why are there such negative effects? We look at this kind of big picture, we see that it's negative, but why are there such negative effects here? And the thesis that I'm kind of arguing for here is that excessive screen time degrades God's design for us, our relationships, and our church. That when Jesus came and he said, I came to give life and give it abundantly, what that meant is that we are meant to have the most abundant, fulfilling, satisfying life when we live it out according to God's design. And what's happening, what I'm arguing here, is that excessive screen use, overuse of the screen, kind of erodes that picture of what God really wants for our lives. And that's why we're seeing more depression, more loneliness, people feeling not connected, more anxiety. It's because people are not fully getting to embrace God's design for what humans and human relationships are really supposed to look like. And so what I want to do here really for the bulk of this time is go through each one of these areas and look at what is God's design for humanity and how does excessive screen time kind of get in the way of that. So let's talk about humanity. God's design for us. What an amazing design God had for humans. Right? He created us to be thoughtful, mindful, and to be high-level consciousness beings. You think about how the Bible describes us as being created. Genesis 1:27 says, so God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And so we get this crazy picture that a lot of times we gloss over, to think that humanity was designed to be an image bearer of God himself. That was not said of any other created thing, right? It was just humans, that we reflect God in a significant way. And you think about, well, what is God like? God is a thoughtful, creative, mindful, conscious being, and God wanted us to be the same way, right? Genesis 2 talks about how he gave us a soul, and that's what really sets us apart. It gives us our free will thinking, right? That's the thing that makes us these image bearers of God. You think about what the Bible calls us to do. It calls us to love God with all of our mind, that we have an ability to use our mind to think about God, to think about people. Think about the things it tells us to do. We're called to consider things, right? To ponder. That's like a very purposeful mindset. It's actually in the Bible, it's an accounting term, this term logizomai, which means to like make an account for, to carefully think through. We're called to consider, we're called to reflect, pray, think about all of these different things. And yet when you look at what excessive screen time really promotes, it ends up decreasing our ability to be mindful like this. You know, not only does the sheer amount of time that we spend doing mindless activities on our screen take away from time that we could be mindful about other things, right? But the more that we expose ourselves to the screen, the more we lose our ability to actually concentrate on things, right? For any sort of lengthy period of time, because what are we used to doing? We're used to scrolling quickly, right? Seeing fast things move across the screen, get quick information bites. It makes it a lot harder to think, concentrate, be mindful about other stuff going on. This is a quote from this book, The Shallows, by Nicholas Carr. It's called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. He says, I'm not thinking the way I used to think. I feel it most strongly when I'm reading. I used to find it easy to immerse myself in a book or a lengthy article. My mind would get caught up in the twists of the narrative or the turns of the argument, and I'd spend hours strolling through long stretches of prose. That's rarely the case anymore. Now my concentration starts to drift after a page or two. I get fidgety, lose the thread, begin looking for something else to do. And I don't know about you, but I certainly identify with this. I was like, I used to study for hours and hours and hours, and sure, you get distracted every now and then. But I don't even want to know how many hours of wasted time was spent even making this, you know, workshop, because I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I need to go do something else or check my phone because, you know, what if someone happened to text me? When normally I'm a terrible texter and never really respond when people text me anyway, right? You know, this idea that we just can't even sit and concentrate on something for a long period of time. We were also designed to have sophisticated thinking. And what I mean by this is really the ability to think critically and creatively about things. Proverbs 14:15 says, the simple believe anything, but the prudent give thought to their steps, right? Or careful thinking. They were meant to be able to think critically, kind of ponder things. I love in Hebrews 5, the author of Hebrews really kind of rebukes his audience there because they were unable to follow a sophisticated line of thinking in theology. He's like, you should be able to understand this, but you don't because you're immature. Check out Proverbs 10:13. He says, doing wickedness is like sport to a fool, and so is wisdom to a man of understanding. That wisdom to a man of understanding is like a sport, he says. It should be fun. That God created us to enjoy learning. God created us to enjoy thinking critically. I don't know how many times in the last couple years I've heard people say, well, I just hate reading, I hate learning, it's not fun, and I will never think that it's fun. That's against our design, and I think we have to be convinced of that, that God created us to really actually enjoy this stuff. Excessive screen time erodes our ability to think critically and creatively. Back to this idea of reward. Screens train us to put in this minimal effort and reap a large reward. You know, that dopamine release of excitement and reward when as soon as I open an app, which is the simplest thing I could ever do, oh my gosh, I got likes and a bunch of people retweeted my thing or whatever. And so we're trained to not do a whole lot and then we get this huge reward out of it. You know, when we're used to this rush of screens, it becomes harder and harder to concentrate on slower, more time-demanding processes, right? Like problem solving, reading challenging material, critical analysis of things, having good discernment and thinking about a situation. We don't want to do that because we're training our brains to do very little and get a high reward out of that. And so it decreases our interest in really dissecting longer, more challenging things. And I think it just shows we get bored, we get confused really quickly, and we just want to give up. I don't know if you've experienced that. I've experienced it in my life. I've seen it in a lot of people too. I think the more people I see that come in that are just so attached to their phones, they're just not interested in learning in the same way. They're like, that's just, it's boring. That's not fun to me. I don't want to engage in that. It takes too long. It's too difficult. And so not only just sophisticated thinking in general, but specifically you think about what God wanted us to be able to think about. He wanted us to be able to think about his world, about creation. Psalm 19:1 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands." That the world actually tells us something about God. And he wanted us to be able to take it in, to look at it, appreciate nature, and learn something about him. You know, that's Paul's whole argument in Romans 1 towards the end of it. He says that as we look around at the world by simply observing the world, taking it in, learning about the world, that that was going to show us something about the supremacy of God and his attributes. And so we're meant to be able to think critically about our environment, about creation, and enjoy nature. But excessive screen time, what does that lead to? It leads us to be way less interested in exploring nature, being outside in the world. Because what do we like to do? We like to sit at home, binge watch Netflix, scroll through social media, play video games, whatever. Again, this is coming out in studies. Kids spend more time in front of a screen than they do outdoors. Kids are spending less and less time outside and more time inside. And the more time we spend inside, you know, being entertained by the screen, the less it even seems desirable to want to go outside and sweat or get dirty or whatever. It just doesn't seem that appealing anymore. And not just thinking about creation, but also we are designed to think about God's word. But God's like, I want you to know me. I'm a personal God, and I've given you this entire world to know about me, but I've also given you this awesome word of mine that is going to tell you so much about who I am and what my plan is for you. And there are so many passages that talk about this, about how we can get to know God through his word. I wanted to look here at Romans 10:17. It says, so faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ. That faith, right, our trust in God begins with understanding and accepting this knowledge that God has given us through his word. That he wants us to be able to study it, ask questions of it, and apply it to our lives. And yet excessive screen time decreases that enjoyment and our ability to even understand God's word. Think about what we talked about earlier, this idea that it becomes harder and harder to sit down, concentrate, dissect difficult material. I don't know about you, but when I sit down and read the Bible, it's not just super easy all the time, but it takes time. It takes dissecting through things, asking hard questions, doing the study, doing some investigation. And when that doesn't seem appealing, it doesn't seem appealing about God's word either. And so God's word becomes less valuable to us. It doesn't seem enjoyable. It seems like a task. It seems like a burden. Like, oh, I'm supposed to read my Bible. That seems so lame. Versus, wow, this is part of my design, so I should enjoy this. Right? We should love getting to sit down and know about God. And I think along with this idea of studying and understanding God's word, it also has to do with memorization. Man, it's hard to memorize the word. Some people love it, are super good at it, but it's challenging. And when you have a little device, right, that you can immediately go to and get anything you want off of it in 2 seconds, it kind of decreases the need to even memorize and know God's word. Because it's kind of my second brain, right? And I can look it up immediately, so why do I need to memorize God's word? And so it decreases this importance of really knowing and memorizing it as well. Let's talk about relationships. So that was humanity. Let's talk about how this impacts our relationships. Think about God's design for our relationships with people. Big one, we're called to be others-centered. Dozens and dozens of one another passages that detail to us what it means to actually relate to people. And they all center around this idea of serving love. I think probably one of the best passages on this is looking at Philippians 2:3-4. Paul says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. We are called to live lives that prioritize the needs of other people above our own needs. Practicing loving one another, right? Practicing any one of the one another commands that we see in the New Testament assumes that there's a high level of face-to-face relating. Right? This is what it looks like, you know, not just to value others above your own, but thinking about other people's interests, considering them outside of your time with them, and then interacting with them to love them, serve them, and build them up. But what we see in excessive screen time is that it really is promoting me as the center. It's promoting self as the focus. Again, consider social media. I think really you could look at any area of the screen, but I think social media depicts this the best. The obsession with image and how it's perceived encourages this narcissism. This is from a journal called Addictive Behaviors. This is an article called The Relationship Between Addictive Use of Social Media, Narcissism, and Self-Esteem. Their findings were that addictive use of social media was related to higher narcissism by reflecting a need to feed the ego and attempt to inhibit a negative self-evaluation. Right? That it increases more of, I need to think about myself more, because I want to make sure I don't have any negative view of myself, and I need to feed all this positive thought that I have about myself. This is from Twenge and Campbell again. They're talking about utilization of Facebook. People often utilize Facebook to look important, look special, and to gain attention and status and self-esteem. Right, this constant moderation of how we're being perceived online doesn't allow much time to be spent on considering other people. Right, it takes up so much of our thought life to think about, how am I being perceived, what are people thinking about me, and how can I increase the positive and decrease the negative of my image online. Not only that does it give us less time, but I think it also breeds competition. When I scroll through Facebook, what am I seeing? Instagram, what am I seeing? It's the highlights of everybody's life. It is the perfectly, you know, monitored, edited version of what people want us to see, right? I am never going to post on my Instagram, I got in a terrible fight with my husband today and my dog pooped on my carpet. Great day. You know, I would never post something like that. Why? Because it's not meant for that. It's meant for the highlights and what we want people to see about our lives. And so when I scroll through Instagram and see all these seemingly perfect lives, I'm left here sitting there thinking, well, my life sucks. You know, my life does not compare well to these other people, and I'm left feeling sad, depressed, or lonely. Look at these people and all their friends. Where are my friends? I'm not feeling connected with people today. And so it breeds this competition and comparison here. And so it promotes self as the focus. On God's design, we're not just meant to be other-centered, but we're also meant to be interconnected. Think about even back in the beginning, God made Adam and then he said, it's not good for man to be alone. Adam was in a perfect relationship with God, and yet God looked at Adam by himself and said, this isn't good. Right? I created you not to be some sort of an autonomous, independent liver, but instead to be heavily invested in a community of other people. That's how we were created. That's how we were meant to be satisfied, fulfilled. This is to be living in interconnected relationships with other people. And yet, excessive screen time totally undermines face-to-face relating, what is necessary to be interconnected with other people. Think about this, right? More time with screens is less time face-to-face. We already talked about that, right? When that study of the teens, they're spending less time with friends, lots of less time with friends than they used to even 15 years ago. But it's not just about the amount of time that we're spending with people, but it also undermines face-to-face relating, I think, in several areas. For one, relating through a screen seems a lot less risky than relating face-to-face. Screens provide a very, like, easily controlled environment for how I want to interact with people. That I can kind of adjust. I can adjust who I talk to, when I talk to them. I can edit what I want to say. I know what's coming in. I have time to think about it. It's an easily controlled environment. Look at what Sherry Turkle says. This is in her book, Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. She says, whenever one has time to write, edit, and delete, there is room for performance. And so we want to have a good performance. And so the less time we have for these things, the scarier and riskier that interaction is. You know, relating face-to-face means we're going to have all these spontaneous twists and turns in the conversation that how am I going to know how to adjust and adapt to that? Turkle, in her other book, Reclaiming Conversation, says this. She says, when I ask, what's wrong with conversation, answers are forthcoming. A young man in his senior year of high school makes things clear. What's wrong with conversation? I'll tell you what's wrong with conversation. It takes place in real time, and you can't control what you're going to say. This reticence about conversation in real time is not confined to the young. Across generations, people struggle to control what feels like an endless stream of incoming information to assimilate and act on, and interactions to manage. Handling things online feels like the beginning of a solution. At least we can answer questions at our convenience and edit our responses to get them right. And so we don't like this idea of when I'm used to interacting on a screen and I can get my almost perfect response, then when I interact with someone in face-to-face, I might say the wrong thing, I might be weird, I might make them mad, and how do I deal with that? What if they say something crazy and I don't know how to respond to this? It makes us aversive to then want to interact face-to-face. Relating through the screen also seems a lot more exciting than relating face-to-face. Not only can face-to-face relating seem scary and unpredictable, but it also can seem boring when you're so used to these quick new changes, lots of reward, when we're constantly getting the feedback from our screens. This is from that book I mentioned earlier, Irresistible. Adam Alter says this, it's our generation's crack cocaine. People are addicted. We experience withdrawals. We are so driven by this drug. Getting just one hit elicits truly peculiar reactions. I'm talking about likes. Right? His point is, this is what gets us excited, is the likes, the feedback, a new level in our video games, right? A new extra reward, something unlocked. All these different things are just rewards in different ways. And he's saying, this is what we're feeding on. That's what makes things so exciting to us. And so then to go into a face-to-face conversation seems a lot more boring sometimes. You think about what a face-to-face interaction really involves a lot of the times. It's not that exciting. It requires silence. It requires listening. And it requires a lot of patience, because people are sometimes take a long time to get across what they're even trying to say. It involves us having to think critically and ask questions. And that does not seem nearly as exciting as a lot of the activities that we can do on our phones. It also decreases our EQ. EQ is just a short for emotional intelligence. I think this is a super interesting point. I'd love to talk a long time on it, but we don't have time. But your emotional intelligence, it's kind of like an IQ, but for relationships. An EQ is basically how well you are able to recognize and perceive your own emotions and other people's emotions. And so what would go into that, right, is being self-aware, being empathetic, social skills, how you interact with other people. And excessive screen time actually can decrease our emotional intelligence here, particularly in the area of social skills and empathy. There's been a couple different very interesting studies on this. For one, what they've seen is the only thing that really promotes and can cultivate emotional intelligence is face-to-face relating. It's by practicing certain social skills with a person, learning things about body language, learning things about tone of voice. That's the only way that we can really grow and cultivate emotional intelligence. They did a study where they had students at a summer camp where half of them were allowed to use their phones as normal, and the other half, they took their phones away and they weren't allowed to use phones all week. And then at the end of the week, what they had both sets of students do is look at different photos with different facial expressions showing different emotions and try to identify what emotion is this person showing. Across the board, the students that were not allowed to play with their phones for just a week did significantly better in properly identifying nonverbal communication than the students that didn't. And so what we see, and I can just tell you this is true anecdotally, as people come in that are more and more obsessed with their phones, you see this like complete lack of social skills. You see that they can't empathize, they're not interested in other people, right? And this is what this is promoting, right? It's decreasing this. It's not promoting more face-to-face relating and understanding people, it's actually decreasing it. And so a lifestyle of excessive screen time, what does that lead to? People who lack social skills, interact with people awkwardly, don't know how to ask questions. And so not only does it do this, but that doesn't really make, you know, when you feel like you're an awkward person, you're not like, I really want to go try to have a face-to-face conversation. It just perpetuates this because you're like, I don't want to try. I know I'm awkward. And so That's a big thing. Additionally, I think it distracts us. They've done studies where even the presence of a phone in a one-on-one conversation sitting on the table decreases the quality of the conversation. In fact, they interviewed people after this, and people talked about how they're less likely to share personal information if they feel like nobody's listening, and it leads to feeling irritated towards that person and annoyed. This is from Common Sense Media again. They say 72% of teens and 48% of parents feel the need to immediately respond to texts, social networking messages, and other notifications. And so you're sitting there having a conversation and you feel your phone buzz or ting, and you're like, oh my God, I have to respond. And the longer and longer it ticks by where we don't, we feel more stressed. We feel this immediate need that I need to respond to whatever is trying to get my attention. This was pretty wild. This is from just last year. The average American checks their phone on average once every 12 minutes, getting distracted by their phone over 80 times a day. This is the average, right? Many of us in this room could be a lot higher on this. Many times I notice I'll just look at my phone, nothing buzzed, nothing tinged, but it's like, well, what if, right? There's this fear of missing out, that I might miss out on something if I don't just check it, and it's just really fast. But every time we're doing something and we look away to check our phone, we're totally like knocking down whatever concentration we had on whatever we're doing, including interacting with a person. I think the last thing under this of how it undermines face-to-face relating is that it tricks us. It tricks us into thinking that we actually do have friends, that we do have good relationships. This is from Sherry Turkle back in her book, Alone Together. She says, technology is seductive when what it offers meets our human vulnerabilities. And as it turns out, we are very vulnerable indeed. We are lonely, but fearful of intimacy. Digital connections and the sociable robot may offer the illusion of companionship without the demands of friendship. Our networked life allows us to hide from each other even as we are tethered to each other. We'd rather text than talk. I like this picture, this kind of phrase that she uses, the illusion of companionship without the problems, right? Without the painful part of friendship. That it tricks us into thinking that, yeah, I've got, you know, hundreds of followers and I've got thousands of friends, so I'm super connected. I've got a lot of relationships. When in reality, we're not, right? It's trying to convince us that we're close to people, but really, it's walling off any sort of genuine connection that we could actually have with someone when we interact with people in person. And so what about this last category of the church? What is God's design for the church? Well, I think what we talked about with our relationships and with humanity, right, those are deeply integrated into what God's design is for the church. But I think there's some specific things for this too. The first is that we are called to be distinct from the world. Think about Romans 12:2. Paul says, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. This idea that don't get pressed into this mold that the world is trying to press you into, but be different. And that starts with a renewing of the way that you think, what your values are, what your priorities are here. You know, that the church is called to be set apart in what we value, in what our relationships look like, in what our desires are. And yet excessive screen time really just promotes more of the same. It promotes conformity to the world. You know, the internet essentially allows for a virtually limitless avenue of expression, ideas, opinions, right? Be different. And yet oftentimes I think what it does is it ends up promoting more of the same. We can filter what we want to hear. We only see things that we already agree with anyway. And, you know, we look around and how do we get the reward that we've been talking about? It's by getting people to like what we're posting. It's by getting approval of the things that we're doing online. And so it makes us want to be like what we're seeing. It makes us want to be like everybody else instead of being distinct. God's design for the church is that it's every member ministry. This totally goes off this idea of being interconnected, having relationships with one another. And the church is meant to be no different. That the church was not ever set up to be, you know, it's one or two people doing some jobs and everyone else should just sit and observe. That's not the picture we get in Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, but that it's many members and there's one body and every member has a role. And so committed members of the church should be looking, what is my function in this body? Do I know what my role is? And I'm actively committed to actually living that out. Nobody's sitting around saying, well, what church fits me best or something. We're supposed to say, God's placed me in this church and I have a role here. What is my role and how do I play it? Whereas excessive screen time promotes consumer mentality. This consumer mentality, right? This is supposed to cater to me. I want to be entertained. That's going to end up bleeding over into the church as well. This is what screens enable us to do. We have constant access to entertainment, shopping, whatever kind of experience we really want is at our fingertips. And so why would we then come to church, be a part of a church, and think it's going to be any different? Instead, what this is promoting is people need to be catering to me versus I show up and I have a role to play here. Lastly here, God's design for the church is that its purpose is to reach the world for Christ. That is the mission of the church. That was the mission of Christ that he gave to the church, right? To seek and save the lost, right? The Great Commission in Matthew 28, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them and teaching them. That's the mission of the church. Go and make disciples of the entire world. And so as the church, this should be our top priority. And what would that look like if that's our top priority? It's becoming effective communicators of the gospel, becoming effective disciple makers, spending time with people that don't know Christ, investing in people, caring about people, taking an interest in their lives. And yet excessive screen time totally distracts us from that mission, on top of the fact that we already talked about all the issues with relating and how it doesn't prioritize and promote the same things that God does here. And so I'm not going to belabor this point here, but the bottom line is it takes away from time that we could be spending on this mission, thinking about this mission here. And so to summarize what we've looked at in these three areas, it makes sense to me that we are seeing all these negative effects of excessive screen time and how that impacts society, the depression, the anxiety, the loneliness. It makes sense that these things are happening because what's going on is that it's degrading what God's original intent for us really was. And that if we were really promoting activities, spending a huge chunk of time on activities that really honor those things, promote those things, I think things would be really different here. And so what does it look like then to have a balanced approach to this here? I do want to leave with some practical tips instead of just like, technology is terrible, right? We're not saying you shouldn't have a smartphone or don't ever get on the internet. We live in a society where you can't even get a job if you don't have an email address, right? And so it has to be a part of our lives. And so what does it look like to actually move forward in a balanced way with this? Well, I think first we need to study God's design here. Like we've kind of read in some of the articles, a lot of secular people are noticing the negative impact that screens have, but this picture I think really crystallizes when we look at God's design versus what this is really promoting. I think it helps to crystallize why is this going on? Because it's really degrading this picture of God's awesome design for us. We need to study God's word. We need to help other people know it. We need to help people see what does God think is important? What does God prioritize in his word? And how do we go out and do the same thing? Think about the same things. And I think as people grow to understand more and more of what God's purpose is for their lives, they're going to start to see how unhelpful and oftentimes even harmful screen obsession can really be. Right? That we want people to understand the stuff before it's already a bad issue. We need to really know what God's design is for us. Secondly, we need to raise awareness of this issue. I think we need to help people see the short and long-term effects of excessive screen use and how not allowing its addictive nature to really take root is going to positively impact our life. And I think it's this step that it's really important that we not advocate for some sort of like primitive lifestyle that's just not really realistic in the society that we live in, abandoning all use of technology. We need to affirm that technology can be used for good and stress that, but just like anything that is morally neutral, it can be harmful in excess. And that is the picture that I'm hoping that I'm painting here with this, is that this is the screens, this is a morally neutral thing, but anything in excess can really hurt God's design for us. And so how do we raise awareness of this? One, I think we can do readings in personal discipleship or small group Bible studies. Taking any one of some of the books, I put them on the handout, articles from that, different snippets of things, but doing some reading and discussion on it. A lot of people haven't even thought about this stuff or taken it very seriously. We can read it together. I think another way we can do this is utilize it as an antithesis and application if you're a teacher. If you teach the Bible in any capacity, one of the things that we always talk about is we need good antithesis. That is how teachings really land. And when we talk about this back and forth of here's God's design for us, we can use it as an antithesis. I think it would be wrong if my application and my teaching every time was, so you need to be careful about your screen time, right? We need to scatter it around. But I think bringing this up and using it as an antithesis helps people see it. Make it a normal thing to discuss in discipleship and in hangouts. That it shouldn't be that weird to ask questions in this area. Maybe it would be at first if you've never really broached this topic with your friends, but after a while, it'll probably become a pretty normal thing. I think we can ask questions that explore screen use and changes in mood. And what I mean by that is, you know, asking a question like, you know, have you been spending more or less time on your phone or video games or computer lately? You know, do you think that that has anything to do with your increased feelings of loneliness this week? Right? Having people connect, maybe here's why this thing could be going on. Or there's at least some sort of correlation that maybe I need to think a little bit more about. Become aware of your own habits and common triggers for screen overuse. Think about this yourself. I asked for an alarm clock for Christmas. I know that's so lame. But it's when I started reading some of this stuff and I realized a lot of times I waste a ton of time playing Hearts on my phone right before I go to bed or right when I wake up in the morning. I need to not charge my phone on my bedside table. I need to charge it in my bathroom or in my kitchen or somewhere else where I'm not just going to lay in bed for an extra half an hour and play Hearts. What are your kind of common things, the routines that you go through, habits that end up making you waste way more time than you thought that you would on your phone? What I mean by common triggers too, thinking through things like this. For some people, it's like a certain sensation or an emotional state. You know, pay attention to when you're most likely to binge watch Netflix or scroll through Instagram for hours feeling sorry for yourself. You know, is it when you're hungry? Is it when you're stressed? When you're bored? When you're feeling sad? What is it for you? Because I think for everybody, it's going to be different. Familiar environments. Maybe you waste a ton of time because you always go to the same coffee shop and it's almost become not made, but it's just become a routine that before you get started on any homework, you update yourself on Ohio State sports for an hour and a half or whatever, all the off-season news. What kind of familiar environments do you tend to waste a lot of time in? Notifications, texts, emails, all the push notifications. I didn't know what push notifications meant for a long time, and I always just said, don't allow, because I don't know what that is. I'm glad I didn't allow them. Are there certain notifications, or do you get notifications for every new thing that comes in? Can you limit that? Do you need to know every time somebody posts something new on Facebook? Probably not. I don't want to know. What is it for you? Rituals, again, far too many of us check our phones kind of the moment we wake up, like I do, or the moment you go to bed. What are these rituals for you that you tend to waste a lot of time in, and how can you disrupt that so it doesn't just happen automatically? I think we also should be setting limits. I think time limits are reasonable. I didn't want to throw out a specific, this is how much time you should be utilizing on screens and this is too much, because I think everybody's kind of starting from a different point. But I think kind of getting an understanding of how much time am I actually spending on my phone or video games or whatever. iPhone has that awesome new thing called Screen Time. I don't know if you've ever used it, but it shows you exactly how much time you spend on every different app that you have. It's painful. I did it and I was like, oh, I'll be under an hour every day. Oh my God, no, the first time I did it was 3 hours a day. And then I was like, oh my God. And then the next week was like, you've been up 20% on your screen time. And I was like, oh my God. So do it. It's painful. It's like looking at a credit card statement for the last 3 months. It's a realistic idea of what your starting point is. But being able to set limits, what do you want to do for that? And I think even practical limits, checks for yourselves. If you're like, man, I like to go to home church, but when I go to home church, I always tend to take out my phone and check it. Leave it in your purse all night. Make a limit for yourself that I'm just not going to carry it around with me when I hang out. Developing hobbies, I think, is another big one. I know this may sound stupid, but I think this is biblical, too. This idea that we're not just called to restrict ourselves on certain things. Right? God's never just like, stop doing this thing, limit yourself in this thing. But it's this idea of fleeing and pursuing something else. And so what are we going to replace all this time that we spend with our screens? What are we going to replace that with? And I think for a lot of us, maybe it means developing hobbies. The reason I put this in here too is because I noticed that even in the home church that I'm a part of with a lot of young people, I was like, none of the girls that are in my cell group have any hobbies. Like, they don't. They just like to look at their phones. They don't have anything fun that they like to do. And it doesn't have to be a cool hobby. I love plants and I have a dog, so that's what I really like to do. But finding something that you really enjoy doing that has nothing to do with a screen. And I think this is something that we can teach for parents that are in here. Are you teaching your kids to enjoy things, doing fun things with your kids? In discipleship and friendships, we can show people, they don't have to have the same hobby that you do, but you can bring them along, show them that other stuff can be really enjoyable. Spend time alone. And I don't even mean just it has to be by yourself. I mean, as believers, we're never really alone, right? We're spending time with God. But having time set up where we're actually spending time in solitude, thinking, reflecting, praying, meditating on God's word, and setting yourself up for success. Don't take your phone in to do that. I realize what's really helpful for me is I like to go on a walk outside and I just don't take my phone. And I'm going to be totally honest, the first several times I did that, I literally felt stressed when I'd be out on my walk, like, my phone's at home, and what if something's happening and I need to know about it right now? Leaving your phone at home when you just go out on errands is sometimes like a helpful thing where you're like, I need to learn how to be separate from my phone and not always have it with me. But spending time alone talking to God. And lastly, the point I wanted to make is promoting a social culture. I know here at Xenos, how we do church is more than just coming to a Bible study, but it involves a significant amount of time in fellowship, interacting with each other face to face. This is something I think we should be promoting in all of our churches, right, in our friendships, that we're not just here to do our time and then get out or whatever, but we enjoy spending time with one another. We learn how to talk. We can get past awkward social interactions. We can get past conflict. But promoting a social culture, coming up with fun things to do and helping people that maybe struggle to see how it can be enjoyable end up discovering how awesome it can be to be a part of a real life, in-person, face-to-face interaction. So, that's what we've got for screen time. I left some time for some comments or questions. Yeah, I know I've certainly been guilty of that. Like, oh, I'll just shame this person into not being on their phone or whatever. And you're like, that doesn't work. And it really makes people feel embarrassed and is like, screw you, I don't really understand why not. And I'll just do it when you're not looking or whatever. I think that's a really great point. Yeah, and I think something kind of along those lines that helps too is being willing to ask for accountability, I think, in this area. Like, I mentioned the idea that, like, this can be a normal part of our conversations, but if you recognize, I want to grow in this area, let people in on that. I think that's true of anything. I think that kind of puts our, like, the money where the mouth is to say, hey, I know that I struggle in this area. Can you ask me about it? And I want to be honest with you. Cool. We'll take one more right here. Sweet. Well, thanks for sharing that. Well, thanks for coming, guys. So we're all done here. Thanks.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.